You're listening to Cinema Jaw, the greatest movies podcast ever, recorded on location at the Original Mothers in Chicago. My name is Matt Kay. With me is
Rye, the movie guy. How are we doing today, Matt?
I'm doing good, man. I'm pretty excited about this episode.
Since we started Cinema Jaw, we have always talked about doing a Star Wars episode. This is the first of what I think will be a few to come.
Yeah, you really can't do Star Wars all in one episode. I mean, this is an epic.
It sure is, and so that's why we got to handle it in epic style. So we're going to do one here. We're going to tackle it. We have a special guest coming on.
Yes, Chris Macht will be joining us a little later. I'll tell you all about him as we bring him in, but let's get right to it, Ryan. What do you got?
Because we got a full episode. So we're going to start off with our usual eye for an eye, interested or ignore.
What's that thing?
It's a new buzzer added to the show.
Did you steal that from, like, your little nephew's board game?
Sort of. I did. Yeah. But we'll go there later. Here we go. Interested or ignore, new movie coming out, Iron Man 2, with the world now aware of his dual life as the armored superhero Iron Man, billionaire inventor Tony Stark faces pressure from the government, the press, and the public to share his technology with the military. Unwilling to let go of his invention, Stark, along with Pepper Potts, and, what do you say, Rowdy Rhodes, Don Cheadle's character?
Roddy
Rhodes, must forge new alliances and confront powerful enemies. Also in the mix this time around are Scarlett Johansson as Black Widow and Mickey Rourke as Crimson Dynamo. John Favreau is back in the director chair. Matt, interested or ignore?
I mean, interested, man. I think we covered this
How
last
couldn't
episode.
You be? Yeah. I'm interested as well. I mean, it's Iron Man 2. We talked about it in the summer movie preview.
Yeah.
It's the first big movie of the summer. I'm there. I'm probably there opening weekend, if not Friday night.
Yeah, this is a blockbuster.
Everything I see in the preview lives up to the billing, too.
I think so as well.
Also, we threw this out to our Twitter fans and Facebook fans. 90% are interested in seeing Iron Man.
No kidding.
Yeah.
90%.
90%.
This is going to be a huge release.
Check this one out. We'll have our reviews once we see it. Talking about reviews, Matt, on DVD, I saw a movie called The Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans. You know
what?
Yes, Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans. You know how I feel about the foolish Nick Cage? Well, this time Nick Cage teams up with Ivana Herzog for this remake of the film Bad Lieutenant, 1992. It starred Harvey Keitel as the Bad Lieutenant. This was sort of a loose remake. This is a role where I just didn't mind seeing the foolish Nick Cage. I actually enjoyed his performance.
Whoa.
The story takes place in the wake of Hurricane Katrina. Cage plays the Bad Lieutenant, who after injuring his back on duty becomes addicted to drugs of all sorts. There's a major crime to be solved here, and Cage does so, but to do that, to get to the bottom of the crime, he climbs deeper into the world of crime and drugs than ever before. There's a few awesome scenes in this movie. I would have actually liked to see Cage get a little bit darker than he did, but Rye the Movie Guy, B+.
Wow.
Yeah. Recommending.
Wow, a Nick Cage movie.
Yes.
So you're really down on Cage, usually.
Exactly, I am. So you know that's saying a lot.
He's got a lot of good films, Rye.
Well, he's foolish most of the times. So the other one I checked out was You the Living. It's a Swedish film from director Roy Anderson. This is one funny, oddball kind of movie. The synopsis says it's a slice of humankind, both joy and sorrow. I only saw the joy. It's very funny. It's, like I said, it's a Swedish film, so you got to read some subtitles here. It's a foreign film, but it's that odd-timed humor where I got a kick out of it when I didn't even know for sure it was supposed to be funny. But it's just the way it's timed. It's almost like a Wes Anderson timing type of comedy mechanism. I don't know. It worked for me.
What's the title?
It's called You the Living. Jen found this one. It was like looked over at Ebert's Fest, like a looked over film.
Yeah.
We checked it out, and I do agree. This one was probably looked over. Most people have never heard of it. Check it out. Put it on the queue. Netflix has it. Blockbuster. Put it on the queue.
All right.
You the Living.
You the Living.
Yes.
All right.
Now, 33 years ago, on May 25th, 1977, the movie business and actually our culture changed forever. Star Wars was released that day, and honestly, no other movie and or series has been as successful. Celebrating its 30th anniversary this year is the second installment, The Empire Strikes Back, which came out May 21st. What better way to celebrate Star Wars than to do a Star Wars episode, and we were treated to an awesome Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
The Force Among Us.
I know, and we have the filmmaker himself, Chris Macht, is joining us here in the studio, and this guy, he's the creative force, no pun intended, behind the film. He's also just a creative guy all around. He's got a couple projects in the works as well. So let's bring him in. Chris, how you doing, buddy?
Welcome to the show.
How you guys doing, man? Thanks for having me on the show.
Did I forget anything in the intro?
No, you got that good.
Pump your ego?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you pumped it well. You pumped it well. On The Force Among Us, I wore many hats, but there was a lot of people on the film that worked on the film that were just, you know, they were Hollywood guys. They worked on Spider-Man 2. They worked with Nicolas Cage on a couple of his projects, and you know, it was at the right place, the right time. You know.
Yeah. Now, The Force Among Us is a documentary that is really showcasing Star Wars Star Wars fandom, I guess is the best way to say it. Would you not?
Yeah, it's pretty much the Hallmark card for Star Wars fans. Mm-hmm. For the 30th, it was released during the 30th anniversary, and it was just a feel good movie about the fans and kind of celebrated the fans and what they've done for that franchise. You know.
And when did you have the idea to come up with this movie? When did you decide, you know what, I'm going to make a movie about Star Wars fans? At what point did that hit you?
About my sixth pint of Guinness, actually. It was at the Carrah in Schaumburg, and they were closing down that week, and me and my sister had went to the Carrah many, many times before. We went to the streets of Woodfield to see many different Star Wars movies years before, and it was almost a year after 2005, and 2005 was kind of like just a big year for me. It was almost like the summer of love for some of the hippies that lived in the Haight-Ashbury district. You know, it was. I met George Lucas. I went to Tunisia, where they filmed the original Star Wars movies. I had flown out to both red carpets in L.A. and in London.
Wait, how'd you get involved with this, man? This is stuff I didn't even know.
You know, actually, I did all this on my own. You know, I just I love to travel, and the way that
so you were stalking Lucas is what you're saying.
You know, not really stalking Lucas, but I think the way that I looked at it is, okay, 2005, Episode 3 is finally released. He might release three more, but to this day, he's said he's not going to release any more movies.
The saga is complete.
The saga is complete, yeah. And I was like, man, I would be crazy enough not to kind of chase my fandom, you know? So
sure.
I was coming home from Celebration 3 in Indianapolis in 2005, and I was just like, you know, wow, man, I'm gonna fly out to L.A. and go to the red carpet event. And then from there, they released tickets for the U.K. premiere, and I flew out from L.A. to there, and then a week after, I went to Tunisia. It was just a crazy whirlwind experience. So as a Star Wars fan, that was almost... Not almost. That was better than opening toys on my birthday or for Christmas when I was a kid. You know, that was like the adult version of it. You know, and especially after getting Lucas's autograph and meeting him in a lobby and in a
did
movie
you get to
lobby.
Have words with him, or was this more like a handshake and sign your autograph?
And did you search him at any point and try to find his neck?
You know. Yeah, his neck. You know what? I'm still looking for that. You know, it was one of those things where I had seen Episode 3 already. It wasn't released to the general public yet.
Mm-hmm.
I had seen it 2 days before in Los Angeles. They were doing their red carpet premiere out there. And here I was in London, and they showed all six movies. They started with The New Hope.
Oh, wow.
And then they ended with, you know...
Revenge
of the Sith. You know, it was kind of like the build-up, you know? And Christopher Lee was there, and the music was outside. Like, the orchestra was playing. And it wasn't the London Symphony Orchestra, though. But it was just a really crazy, festive experience, you know?
I bet.
And here I am at the end of the day. I'm like 3 hours asleep. And I'm sitting in my seat in the theater. And, you know, seats out in London, they're numbered. You know, it's kind of like concert seating.
Oh, okay.
You know,
it's assigned seating inside the
it's
theater.
It's assigned seating.
Nice.
And my seat just happened to be on, like, the first balcony, the second row of the first balcony. And Lucas comes out, and he introduces the film. He leaves, and he comes back, and he's standing there, you know, and he's watching the beginning of Revenge of the Sith. And I'm like, man, I don't want to be that guy, but I'm going to have to interrupt all these people that are sitting next to me.
Yeah.
Because I have to go to the lobby, because there's only one way out of here, you know?
Yeah.
I go out to the lobby, There's this guy, you know, his shaved head, long goateed, face is pierced, got a Sharpie in one hand, a lightsaber hilt in another. And I'm like, this isn't your first rodeo, is it? He goes, no. He goes, is this yours? I said, yeah, I'm scared to death, you know?
Yeah.
So Lucas finally comes out. Just me and him and like some of the lobby people.
Yeah.
Because all the fans.
He's getting popcorn.
All the fans are watching the movie.
All the fans waited all day.
Yeah.
For the movie, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm out.
Lucas or no Lucas, they're watching the movie.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, the fans in London, they're not like celebrity crazy like we are.
Yeah.
You know, we chase somebody down, you know, in the middle of a dark street or dark alley or whatever just to get the autograph. And fans in London, they're a little bit more laid back. And so Lucas comes out. This guy runs up, gets the autograph from Lucas, and I'm standing there. I just freeze up,
mm-hmm.
and Lucas kind of looking around, see if anybody else is there. And I just said, George, I came all the way from the States. So Lucas walks up to me.
Uh-huh.
I didn't say a word. I shook like a fish out of water. I'm holding this 8x10, you know, in my hands. I'm shaking. I'm like, this is just so weird, man.
Almost
this
surreal,
is,
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the fans are inside. They're getting their big treat. But I'm like, man, this is awesome.
You had already seen the film.
No, so I'd seen the film like 2 days before.
Yeah,
so you're not missing anything.
I'm not missing anything. No. And Lucas comes up. He signs my autograph. And that was it, man. I didn't get a photo with them or nothing. And
yeah.
I kind of regretted that. But you know what's funny? If you take a photo with somebody that you're longing to meet, longing to get a photo with, like, what if my eyes were closed?
Yeah.
What if his eyes were closed? You know? What if he has a complex where, because I see a lot of, I always like putting my arm around somebody, you know?
Yeah.
And every time I see Lucas with somebody, they're like this.
Yeah.
and you know what? The memory is like flashball memory, you know, like the day that Kennedy was shot. Everybody always remembers all the details about mm-hmm. that.
Yeah, and I wasn't born yet, though.
You know, no, I wasn't either.
Yeah.
I wasn't either. But those certain memories, and I don't want to compare, like, meeting Lucas to Kennedy's death by any means, but, you know, these important things in our life.
No, I get what you're saying.
You don't
for
need
sure.
a photo, you know?
Yeah.
It was crazy. So.
There's a photo of me with Tone Loc on my Facebook page.
Is it really? Yeah, actually, Tone Loc, he's been here before, yeah?
He played here at Mother's, yeah.
He's played here a couple times.
So 2005, huge year for you. That's when, at that point, you're like, we're going to make this movie.
I think it was a year, almost a year later, you
okay.
know? I was sitting in the Irish pub with my sister, 6 pint of Guinness, you know? And I'm like, man, what am I going to do with my fandom, you know?
Yeah.
She goes, you need to make a movie. You're a creative guy.
And,
you know?
And have you, at that point, made movies prior to that?
No, but I'm in the music business.
Okay.
That's what I went to college for,
okay.
you know. And when I made The Force Among Us, it was my first movie, but I was with the people, the crew, that was like their 100th movie, you know. So it was just the right group of people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, like the next day, I went over to my sister's house, and she goes, what's that? What's that in your hands? And I'm like, it's the script for the movie.
Mm-hmm.
She goes, oh, that was drunk talk, man. I said, no.
That's just what we call pillow talk, baby.
And I was like, no, you forget. Every time I'm drunk, I'm not one of those guys that like gets drunk and is like, oh, I forgot half the night. That's like when my truth comes out, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this is real. This is going to happen. And from there, we just you know, took the steps and went around the obstacles that were placed in front of us, and there was many.
Mm-hmm.
And we started filming in August of 2006, you know? So
wonderful. Now, me and Matt, we both screened the movie this week.
Yeah. Oh, I really enjoyed it.
So did I, as did I. My first question about the film is, it was, how did you know all the people, or did you meet the people that you were interviewing throughout the viewing process, the filming process?
Yeah, I would say, like,
because there's a lot of characters in this movie. I mean, there's collectors, there's people that like to dress up at the conventions. There's a whole gamut of fans that you run across.
You guys maybe didn't even realize that there were all these different kind of fans.
Right.
You know, and when we first sat down to start talking about, you know, what is this movie going to be about, we had said, you know, we want to kind of show that Star Wars is the one thing that really brings us all together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of like Woodstock was the music festival that brought all those people from their counterculture together, you know? And Star Wars is really no different than that. And we said, let's show all these different kind of fans and show how Star Wars is the one thing, and but we started, the collector. Yeah, that's my cousin. You know, the guy that dresses up and he's part of the 501st. That's my best friend, Duffy, you know. And then we knew all these people, you know. And, of course, along the way, like the people that aren't really starring in the film, you know, those were little extras that we were like, well, we met these people along the way. Let's give them a little spot in here to kind of bridge the gaps.
Yeah, make them feel like they're part of the community.
Yeah, make them feel like they're part of the community and kind of tie it all together. And going back, though, what really helped write The Force Among Us and get it done was just the passion I had for it, the desire that I had to really showcase and talk about my love and my hobby, and really being kind of depressed after 2005. You know, it was just such a big year. It's like I felt like I needed to do something else.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what really kept it from getting done. You know?
Now, I know I was a very big fan of sort of the part that showed, like, that little kid that was in the movie, his take on the Star Wars trilogy, or I should say the six movies, how he had no...
The generation gap.
Yeah, the generation gap. To me, and to probably everybody here, there's the prequels and the original trilogy, and we clearly see a divide of the three movies and the other three, but it was so interesting to see a younger kid's point of view that there is no gap there. He thinks of it as like, oh, well, those older movies, yada,
right,
yada.
Right.
But
yeah,
he's a fan of, you know, the prequels. And I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah, very fascinating.
Yeah, with the prequels, I mean, you definitely had this whole entire new generation come in, you know, that got into Star Wars. And, you know, you can also see the young people in the movie. A lot of them got into it because their parents were there, you know, and they were there for the first three, you know, New Hope through Jedi. And it's something that is almost kind of handed down or was introduced, you know, to their kids.
Yeah, another question I had for you was near the end of the film, they actually go on location to some of the film shoots of where Star Wars took place, the locations. The two locations are...
Tunisia, which is where they filmed the desert scenes for New Hope.
Yeah.
Not,
now, did you travel? You traveled to Tunisia. At that point, you were saying before we went on air, that wasn't even before you started shooting the film.
Yeah, that was that was actually kind of something that led to the year after. It was like, wow, that was so cool that I did that. I got to do something more, you know.
Yeah.
And when we were in Tunisia, a friend of mine in Belgium, he's kind of he calls himself a pioneer, you know, of Star Wars sites, and he always goes to all these different Star Wars locations. And I got a chance to meet him probably in the early 2000s, just autograph collecting, and I met him through the internet, and he put together this trip of going to Tunisia, Tatooine. And I was like, man, this would be awesome to do, you know. And when we went out there, we took a lot of handycam footage.
Sure.
Just for as fans.
Yeah,
you know?
For posterity, right.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
So then you were able to use that footage in the film.
Yes. And then now when you watch the – so that was 2005, right?
Yeah.
So then – I wanted to interview my friend Mark, who brought me to Tunisia. And we were going to do some, like, almost like a CNN type thing where you would see the map of Belgium and his face would be in the corner.
Sure.
And we were going to do it through Skype. And the movie just got the production value of it just kind of got greater and greater that we're like, we would shortchange ourselves. Well, he's going to Norway where they film The Empire Strikes Back. And I'm like,
Hoth, right?
Hoth. And I was already signed up as a pioneer to go do this thing as a fan, but then I'm like, wow, let's bring the film crew out there, you know, and that added to like more than half the budget going out to Norway. And I got to tell you, man, when you make a film and you have to film overseas, you know, you have to get a film crew of five people, you know, over to Norway. And Norway is probably the most expensive place in the world. You know, it's tough to get to. It's expensive. And I put up a film crew of five, man. I mean, that was like $15,000+.
Yeah.
And in the film, it's in there for 10 minutes tops.
Right. Right.
You know, and I really understood the filmmaking process because of, you know, being a producer on it. I'm like, wow, I can see how a movie caught, like Iron Man, cost billions of dollars,
yeah,
you know,
because
they're blowing things up.
Sure.
They're filming here, they're filming there.
Yeah,
and,
but to be honest with you, that actual, that small scene near the end gave the film such a larger scope overall, because it was the idea that you traveled to Tunisia and then you went to Norway. It made the film seem much more global aspect. Like, this is
bigger
than...
And that's what
than,
I wanted to do.
This is bigger than just, hey, some guy is making a quick documentary about fans.
It
transcended that.
Right, yeah.
I don't think the film would even be probably 65% of what it is now, you know, without that Norway stuff. I mean, it was just, and Norway was just so crazy, man, because you're in the hotel where Lucasfilm, because I don't know if you guys have heard, but like the Tauntaun scenes and that, you know, it was too cold to film in Norway, so they would film it outside the hotel door. You know, right?
Really?
Right in back at the hotel. And just to be out there, you could almost feel the ghost of Irvin Kershner's crew in the basement of the hotel 1222. You know, it was just really, really crazy. And, you know, we wrapped on my sister's birthday out in Norway, and it was just kind of like this big climatic end. It's like me and my sister were on the glacier, you know, feeling like we're on the battlefield of Hoth. And I was just like, this is just really surreal that we've brought this movie to this point.
Mm-hmm. You know,
to Hoth, exactly. It was so crazy, so magical. It would be impossible to relive, and it's just probably hard to even come close to reliving that experience again. You know, it was amazing.
Now, we understand there's still a few copies to be had of The Force Among Us.
Yeah, I know. I'm glad you brought that up. That was going to be my question. Where can you get it? I mean, obviously...
Well, you can get it at theforceamongus.com. And, you know, I try to do a lot of film festival circuits and just got rejected left and right, you know. And I'm like, film festival submissions, you know, add up, you know. Mm-hmm. And you were nice enough to let us debut our 10-minute trailer here at
the
incubator.
Yeah.
3 years ago now, you know. And so we tried to do it the right way, but like Lou Piniella right now putting Big Z in the bullpen, you really have to think outside the box. So I'm like, nobody's gonna take our film into a film festival, so let's just get this done instead of having it sit on a shelf and release 1977 copies. Because after you spend all your time and money, the last thing you want to do is just have it sit. You know?
Right. Tell me about it.
If it wasn't for the Star Wars fans, this movie wouldn't have gone anywhere. You know, I have very, very limited copies left. I thought that I would have sold out by now, 3 years later. But, you know, there's only a handful of hardcore Star Wars fans that really wanted to see our movie, you know. And the nice thing about it is we get the casual fan from time to time. And, you know, we've actually dropped the price to half price right now. It's 10-10, you know, kind of like for 2010, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We always have this idea of kind of cool marketing, you
sure.
know.
Well, it's a steal at that price and a great,
it is. It really
great
is.
Gift to give any Star Wars fan if you know somebody out there that's a Star Wars
sure.
fan. TheForceAmongUs.com.
It's a feel good movie, you know. It's definitely different than all the other ones that have been out there because we filmed it in Hoth, you know, and we show the young kids and all the other Star Wars fan movies, you know. They were just that. They were shot on handycam. They were about somebody waiting in line for Phantom Menace.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't really celebrate anything, you know.
This is a celebration of Star Wars.
It is the Hallmark card for Star Wars fans.
Yeah, well, congratulations on the film.
Thank you.
3 years later, but it was a fun watch.
I think this thing will
be a Star Wars fan.
This will find its audience, man. You know, sometimes it takes time for things to catch on. But
sure,
it was a great film.
I appreciate that, man. And you know what? I learned a lot, and it's going to help me with my next project, you know. And maybe my next project does really, really well that people are going to be like, oh, I want to watch his other film.
And tell us about your next project.
We're going to get back to Star Wars, you know, in a second.
But this
sounds real interesting.
Well, my next idea, and we've been working on it for about a year now, is a fan documentary, kind of like The Force Among Us. It's about the fans, about the Chicago Cubs and the Chicago White Sox fan rivalry. And oddly enough, I didn't think the rivalry was that important, but now they have the BP Cup, you know, for the Crosstown Classic.
Right.
It's crazy. So I think, and that hasn't been done. It's
no.
like
that rivalry is alive and well right here on Cinema Jaw because I'm a Cubs fan and Rye's a Sox fan.
I'm a diehard Sox fan. So I'm very interested in seeing a movie like this. We're going to have him back on when that movie comes out.
Yeah, what's the projection on that, the timeline?
You know, probably start filming some this year. Start filming some this year, especially with the BP Cup now. You know, the fan rivalry is almost under a different kind of spotlight right now.
Well, it's a good year to start because this is the year that the Cubs are going to win the World Series.
I swear.
It is. It's year number one, man. It's year number one.
You just stole my line. I was going to say the same thing about the White Sox. All right.
No, hey, maybe it'll be the Cubs and the White Sox in Chicago for the World Series, you know?
Back a couple years ago when that season they were both in the postseason.
Yeah, 2008, man.
Yeah. That was hardcore. We all, for a moment there, was like, what's going to happen?
Maybe.
This city's going to burn.
Yeah, it's going to be a crazy, crazy day for sure when that happens. So.
Yeah, all right. I hope I live to see it.
Yeah. So what we also wanted to do was go around with some Star Wars questions here.
Yeah.
Have a little fun with it. Get a little information. We got a Star Wars expert. I think all three of us are pretty hardcore fans of Star Wars.
Absolutely.
To say the least. So I'll start off just asking the fellow panel here. We'll start with Chris to rank the six films in order from top to bottom.
Top being the best.
Top being the best.
Okay. It would be Revenge of the Sith, almost tied with Empire Strikes Back. A New Hope, Return of the Jedi, Episode 1, and last but not least, Clone Wars.
Wow.
It would be actually Attack of the Clones. Attack of the Clones.
Sorry. Yes.
That's controversial, man.
Yeah, I am shocked. This is the first time in a long time that I've heard someone say, go Sith, number one.
No, I'm not shocked by that. Sith is hardcore. You want to hear my order?
I'd love to hear your order,
because
Matt.
It's pretty similar, but we got some differences here. I'm putting Empire at number one, and there's no wishy-washy. I'm firm on that.
Okay.
But Sith is number two. Followed by Jedi, then I'm going to New Hope, Attack of the Clones above Phantom Menace for sure.
Really?
Yeah. Phantom Menace, man. Dude, that was the worst of the six.
I got to disagree with you. Hold on here. Let me give you my six, and then we'll talk. Number one, I have a New Hope.
You're a purist.
Yes, I love a New Hope. I am a purist. Number two, I have Jedi. Number three, Sith. Oof. Number four, did I butcher this?
I butchered it.
Number two, Empire. Sorry.
Okay, so number one is New Hope.
New Hope.
Two
number
is Empire.
Two is Empire.
Three.
Number three is Sith.
Uh-huh.
Number four is Jedi. Number five is the
Which
first one.
One.
Phantom Menace. And then the last one's Attack of the Clones.
Really?
Yes.
You guys both have
I think Attack of the Clones is the weakest of all of them.
You know, and
whoa,
and
no way. With the little kid? I mean, he sucked.
He did, but it was a few tweaks away from being a...
That movie should never... aside from the Star Wars name on that movie, that is a crappy movie.
No way.
Phantom Menace
is
just a bad movie.
No, you know what? The one scene, though, and it's going to be hard to fight with me on this one, but that one scene, though, where you have Obi-Wan, Qui-Gon, and Darth Maul... It kind of sucked that they did cut in the Jar Jar battle with that, you know?
Right.
Because they were kind of...
The land battle going on.
Yeah, land battle, the space battle, which the space battle was okay, you know?
It was a pretty good one.
But that trio lightsaber battle, the duel of the fates, that was the best scene out of all six movies, hands down.
And
that was just so intense.
That was awesome. And that brings me to this question. One of my questions on my list is... What is the best lightsaber duel out of the six movies? We'll start with you, Matt.
Oh, man, you're putting me on the spot,
yes.
Dude. That's like one of the hardest questions of all. I mean, my gut instinct is to go...
Go with your gut.
Darth Vader versus Luke Skywalker in Return of the Jedi.
Oh, Return of the Jedi.
Yeah. That's the second best.
That is an awesome one. I'll go next. It's rising up for me. Absolutely love this scene in Sith. Obi-Wan Kenobi versus Anakin, the lava. It might have been a little too CG. I would have liked maybe a little bit more.
Good, man.
But I love the music. I love the transformation of Anakin to Darth Vader there. He's evil. It's a very emotional fight. Chris, what do you got for your best?
Well, I would say the best one would probably be the Duel of the Fates from Episode 1. But, you know, I think the most emotional would be a tie between Vader and Luke when he's hiding and he tells him he has a sister.
Yes.
Yeah. And he runs. That's just so powerful with the music. Yeah. And but you know what? The cool thing about and the nice thing about the Obi-Wan and Anakin battle is they really go in and out of one of the other great battles was between Yoda and Sidious.
Right.
I don't think that was long enough. I think that was too short. But the music, they brought in the episode one music.
Yes.
You know, awesome. Man, I'm getting goosebumps all over again. I've been spending too much time in Wrigley, you know?
Which is I was going to go with an honorable mention here for Yoda versus...
Yoda versus Count Dooku.
Yeah,
wow. That one was overrated.
Yeah. It's overrated, but that's the first time we get to see Yoda throw down. How cool was that?
That's my least favorite.
Yeah.
But as a moment in movie history... When Yoda like pulls out the lightsaber for the first time, you know?
Yeah, it was okay. It was you know, I went to Celebration 2 in Indianapolis, mm-hmm. and Rick McCallum actually showed that part before the film was even released. If I was sitting in the theater,
everybody had to love it.
And that scene just came on, and because I already knew that was happening.
So it got kind of ruined for you.
It blew it for me, man. Totally blew it for me.
All right, I got another question. We're going to start off with Chris on this one. If Princess Leia and Queen Amidala are not available due to a girl's night out, who would you ask out on a date in the Star Wars universe?
Natalie Portman, hands down. Natalie Portman
she's unavailable.
Natalie Portman unavailable.
Oh, she's
Princess
unavailable.
Leia and
she's washing her hair, okay. Chris.
Those two are out.
Rose Byrne. From episode 2, I don't know, you know the actress Rose Byrne? She was a handmaiden in episode 2. She was the one that said goodbye on the train that cried.
Oh, yes.
She was, I don't know why I have the hots for that chick, you know?
Fair enough.
Okay, I'm going to go with the girl who was Jabba the Hutt's dancer before Princess Leia.
Oh, yeah, Ula, yeah.
Yeah. I'll take her.
Well, who is the? What's the name of the cantina singer with the big lips? What's her?
Sice Noodles. Sice.
Got her.
I'm going with her. I'm just thinking. Whoa, hey, what can you do with that?
The puppet version or the CGI version?
Either one.
You got a question for us, Matt?
I do. You know what? My questions were serious, though. They're not silly here. I was thinking. All right, so you know, this is a good question, especially for Chris. When you talk about all the locations in the movies, because they go from planet to planet, Hoth, Tatooine, the Cantina, Cloud City. What's the best, or at least your personal favorite location of all six films?
My
set piece.
Let me start out. I'll start on this one. My favorite, for some reason, is Dagobah. I love Yoda's home. I love the mystique of it all. Yeah. The idea when he tells him to go into the cave and the Darth Vader's in there.
Yeah,
you know, only what
you take with you.
And he's like, I'm not afraid. You will be. There was something mysterious about it.
Very
and
much
I remember getting the toy as a kid. I had the toy Dagobah system.
Yeah, right.
And it was awesome. You could, you know, that goes a whole other thing. We'll have to talk toys another episode.
Dagobah.
Go ahead, Chris.
You know, I would have to say Cloud City was one of my favorite locations. But until I went to Tunisia and Norway, it's just there's a personal connection now. You know, like in my house, I have a loft that's all Star Wars cases, display cases, and my cases are focusing on not only the Jedi from the prequel. I'm a big fan of the various Jedi, even though you don't really see them in the movie that long. But there's a lot of Hoth and a lot of Tatooine stuff in my cases, you know. There's a personal connection because I've actually been there.
Sure.
If you had to choose one, Hoth or Tatooine, if you had to take it down to one.
That's tough. I would probably have to say Tatooine.
Really?
That's really,
warm.
Really tough, man. That's so tough.
I got another question. Are you ready? Go ahead with yours.
I'm going with the Death Star.
Hey. Not bad. Good location.
I mean, that's what, you know, at least in
that's
the first
no
movie.
Small moon.
No.
All right,
it's
listen
a
to
space
this one.
Station.
Think about this one hard, because you got cool death scenes and you got emotional death scenes. Your favorite death scene in the Star Wars universe?
Oh.
Chris, we'll start with you.
My favorite death scene. I hate to say favorite, but the one that makes me tear up, really, is almost when Yoda is dying. Yeah, he's trying to talk to Luke.
Sure.
And it took me like 20 years to understand that he said there is another Skywalker.
Right.
Yeah, but there's something really,
It wasn't until we had surround sound at home that you could really make it out.
Yeah, yeah. It's tough. It's tough to answer.
What's the Yoda quote for when people die? He says, more not the people who transform to the Force or something like that?
Yeah. He pretty much just says death is a natural part of life.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's what he says in the end.
How about you, Matt?
You know, it's easy to go with the, you know, the old scene where Obi-Wan dies, but that's not my pick. I guess when Padme dies, you know, that was really when Luke and Leia's mom passes away in childbirth.
Yeah, that was heavy, man.
Wow,
yeah.
Now that I'm thinking about it, we got a lot of heavy death scenes, and I was just going to go with a cool one because I didn't want to get too emotional, and I went with Darth Maul.
What about Wedge?
I love when he gets cut in half and falls all the way down the and you don't realize that he was cut in half until he starts falling down that pit, whatever that is. That part's awesome.
You know what death scene shocked me the most? When Mace Windu went flying out the window.
Yes. Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, Mace is dead. I mean, that was the death scene that I did not expect at all. That came out of left field.
Yeah, plus you have the Emperor dying, which was pretty awesome of a moment in Star Wars. Finally, Vader picks him up and
in
throws
Jedi,
him down.
Yeah,
yes,
Return
that
of the
was
Jedi.
Awesome. And of course, Vader's scene.
I think that's a really cool thing about what Lucas did in his movies is that he was not afraid. There's a lot of death in Star Wars, man. I mean,
absolutely.
A lot of death, you know? And I think...
Nobody ever talks about the stormtroopers that died, though, man.
Yeah.
It was almost like stormtroopers dying was almost like watching the G.I. Joe cartoon as a kid.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
like
the Cobras always had the parachute. Like their plane just exploded, but they're parachuting to safety. It's okay.
All right, how about this? Better Death Star destruction scene, Episode 4, A New Hope, or Jedi?
Wait, now you have to clarify. Are we talking pre or post remakes or new
we'll
additions?
We'll go pre.
You have to go pre.
Yeah.
You have to.
You like Star Wars or you like Jedi for the destruction of the Death Star? Matt?
Jedi.
That's wrong. No, I'm kidding.
I would have to say A New Hope.
Yes.
You know, the first one, because there's just something about this farm boy that has no experience. And, you know, Obi-Wan tells him to shut the mechanics off, you know, shut the screen off and just feel it, you know.
Yeah.
And even Red Leader.
Luke, you turned off your targeting computer.
What are you doing?
What's wrong?
Actually, that was another death scene when Red Leader dies.
Right.
That was intense,
yes,
man.
Because
it's like, here's this guy leading all these guys, you know.
And when Luke looks, he's like all by himself.
I know.
You know?
Definitely the first one.
Yeah. Oh,
sure.
Biggs, get out of here. You can't do any good back there.
Yeah.
I love it. You got another question for us, Matt, before we go to break?
Yeah, I do. Speaking of the new additions... here's my question. Did Lucas screw up when he changed things in the Star Wars universe? Did, by going back and augmenting the first three films, did he mess up? Was that a mistake?
I'll say this much. I don't really think so. It's only as serious as you take it. I don't think, for most fans, I mean, we're hardcore fans here. Yeah, we might be a little ticked off, but for most people... I don't think so. I don't really think they mind it. But for the small portion of the hardcore...
But it's like painting a mustache on the Mona Lisa.
I myself would say it should always leave the artwork as is, especially as classic as Star Wars was. Don't touch it. It doesn't need to be. You know, if you update the print, clear up the print, add surround sound just in, show you the movie for, you know, that kind of aspect. But to add and change the movie... No, I would have liked to.
I mean, it really did change the movie. It changed the look. It changed the feel. It changed the storyline with Greedo shooting Han first. And it was just, I don't know. And I remember in 92, I picked up like a sci-fi magazine. There were so many back in the early 90s. And I remember reading an interview with Lucas. And he's like, you're going to see the new movies, but they're going to be boring. And they're going to come out in 97. And I was like, oh, man, I don't care how boring they are. I want them. So I waited from like 92 to 97, which isn't that long of a wait. But when you want more Star Wars, it is, you know. And 97 came around, and it's like, I didn't wait for the special editions.
Right.
You know? It was a letdown. It really, really was, you know.
What do you think, Matt? Should have left them the same, right?
There were a couple of parts that I liked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of the updates were kind of cool. But for the most part, yeah, man. I mean, especially the Greedo shooting first thing really ticked me off. Because that was really what defined Han Solo's character
right.
for me.
Yeah, like, I agree. That changes a character, you know, in one scene.
He's not afraid to shoot first.
Absolutely.
You know?
Before we go to break, I'm looking for your best Chewbacca impersonation.
Oh,
Matt,
God.
Go ahead.
Man, I can't do it.
Chris...
No, I've never done
this
before.
I just did it. I just did it. Oh, he had the wrong.
You win, man. You win.
Rye's been practicing.
Yeah. So with that, we'll take a break. We'll be right back here on Cinema Jaw. Hi, I'm Rye the Movie Guy with an Amber Alert. Cuba Gooding Jr. won an Oscar for Jerry Maguire. He was then in notable films such as Good as It Gets and Pearl Harbor. But sometime soon after, his career vanished. If anyone you know has information about the whereabouts of Cuba Gooding Jr.'s career, please contact his agent. He would like to know about it.
Okay, we're back. You're listening to Cinema Jaw. We're here doing the Star Wars episode with Chris Macht. You can get his film, The Force Among Us, at theforceamongus.com. Makes sense.
Absolutely.
Forceamongus.com.
Big and fan of the movie? Do. You'll like it if you're a Star Wars fan or if you have a Star Wars fan that you need to buy a gift for.
Or if you're just interested in pop culture in general.
I agree.
Or movies.
Plus, it's half price right now. I mean, you can't be. And it's not going to be half price for much longer, you know?
Jump on it. Use the Force. All right, listen to this one. We got some movie headlines. Are you ready, Matt?
Yep.
In various studies of varying quality, violent adult media has been linked to aggression, lower grades, early smoking, early sex, and antisocial behavior. Adding fuel to the fire is a new study that will be out in May in the Journal of Studies on Alcohol and Drugs, linking R-rated films to the use of alcohol earlier in life.
This is the biggest crock of dung I've ever heard. I mean, this is a chicken and the egg thing, man.
I
don't even have a funny quip.
I saw an R-rated movie when I was 6 years old, and look how I turned out.
Yeah,
it sounds like they're doing to the film industry what they did to the music industry 20, 30 years
ago.
You
yeah,
know?
Not to mention the video game industry. I don't think Hitler was watching R-rated films, was he?
I don't think so.
No. Anyway, I got one. Sorry to bring up Hitler. that brings it down. Boo. All right. Anchorman sequel? Anchorman stars okay pay cut for bigger, crazier sequel. Could start shooting February 2011, Rye.
Never saw the original Anchorman.
What?
I know. I hear nothing but great things, but I've never seen it.
You got to see it. Put it on your queue tonight.
All right.
I got no funny quip there. That was just, you got to see Ron Burgundy, my man.
Hey, how about this one? From the LA Times, when Robert Downey Jr. and Jude Law return to the big screen with Sherlock Holmes 2, the British gumshoes might end up solving crimes with the assistance of a 3D magnifying glass.
Wow, are they going to do coke off that magnifying glass?
Seems like everything's going 3D. I'm sick of it already.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, I got one for you. Will Batman lose his edge on stage? Warner Brothers are planning?
I don't know.
Okay. According to this headline, are planning on a theatrical version of The Caped Crusader. But will Batman Live have any of the menace of The Dark Knight?
I don't think Batman on stage is a good idea. Just don't.
No, not at all.
Fantastic movie. Leave it as that.
Well, you know, if you kind of went with the Adam West and Bill Ward sort of thing, with that tongue-in-cheek.
I just think these stage things are getting out of control. Here's one for you, Matt. Local news. Real Chicago is reporting that starting July 4th and filming for 7 weeks, director Michael Bay's Transformers 3 will be shot here in Chicago, which, along with the city of Moscow, will be the focus of the big action sequences of the movie.
So look for some cool cars out in Chicago.
Yes.
You might see Frank Yario, who worked on The Force Among Us. He'll probably be on set for Transformers 3.
Yes, and what's great about this is Chris won't have to travel too far to go to the locations of Transformers number 3.
That's right.
All right, I got one for you. Unsurprisingly, Avatar has set a new record for first day Blu-ray sales, selling 1.5 million copies on Earth Day.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're blue in the movie. Blu-ray suits them. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I think it is a must. If you're going to buy it, I'd buy it on Blu-ray. I mean,
I agree. It's funny that they're selling on Earth Day, though, when it's not even on Earth.
You know what? That movie was released on Blu-ray. That's not even released in 3D, though, is it?
No.
That's crazy. That's crazy that they sold that many, you know, because now they have, going back to the 3D thing, they have the TV.
Right.
They had a home TV where you have the glasses, which sucks because I actually tried it on. And I'm surprised they didn't kind of go on that marketing campaign, you know?
Maybe they will. Maybe this is an early one. We'll see.
Yeah, probably.
All right, so it moves us to trivia this week.
Oh, I'm excited.
It's sort of Star Wars themed. It's sort of Star Wars themed, but not much. It's called Over or Under. I'm going to give you questions. You're going to tell me over or under the number I throw out. You'll get the idea right off the bat.
Okay.
Chris is our guest. He goes first.
Give me an example.
No steals. No steals involved on this
one. Okay, no steals.
It's A or B. You know what I mean? So Chris goes first. We got 9 questions. Chris, Harrison Ford's age, over or under 65?
Over.
Correct. 67 years old, Harrison Ford. Matt, Natalie Portman's age.
False.
Natalie Portman's age, over or under 31 years old?
She's younger than me. Under.
28. 1-1. Good match here. Good match. Over to Chris. George Lucas. Yeah, I don't know if you ever heard of him. He directed the Star Wars films. George Lucas's age, over or under 67 years old?
Over.
No.
65.
You got the 65. George Lucas question wrong.
Wow, 65. That's crazy.
He looks older in person, I guess.
He does. A lot older.
Matt. Kenny
it's
Baker.
It's that lack of a neck that
Kenny
really.
Kenny Baker. He played R2-D2.
Yeah.
How old is he? Over or under age 70?
Under? I have no idea, although I met him.
75 years old, Kenny Baker. Part B of the question over to Chris. How tall is Kenny Baker? Over or under 3'10"?
Under.
3'8" on Kenny Baker.
And man, I got to tell you, Kenny Baker, he loves to drink, man. He loves to. Yeah, I've actually partied with him a couple of times.
Keeping with the age, it's 2-1. It's 2-1, Chris over Matt. Keeping with the height, I should say, Peter Mayhew, who played Chewbacca, how tall is he, Matt? Over or under 6'10"?
6'10". I don't know. He's a big dude. I don't think he's 7 foot tall. I'll say over.
2-2.
This is a 50-50
7
shot.
7 foot, 1 inch tall.
Oh, this is hardly trivia. This is flipping coins here.
Over to Chris. Number of movies Jake Lloyd starred in after The Phantom Menace. Over or under 4?
Starred in over or under 4 after The Phantom Menace. Over 4.
Did you see that YouTube video of him where he's like so bitter?
No,
I hadn't, but
no.
He only starred in one movie. It was the 2001 Madison. Over to Matt.
That's bad.
Still tied at 2. Number of movies Hayden Christensen has acted in since Revenge of the Sith. Over or under 4?
Under. Really?
6. And it actually
but,
has
but
a new movie coming out.
How many of them has anybody seen? Over or under 0?
New movie coming out in 2010 called Takers. This is the last question of the round.
What's the score?
It's 2-2. Chris for the win. How old is Billy Dee Williams? Over or under 65?
I'm going to go with over.
We have a winner of the Star Wars. Believe it or not, Billy Dee Williams, born in 19... Oh, I got the year way wrong. I don't know what year, but... He's 73 years old.
Really?
Billy Dee Williams is 73 years old.
He looks good.
He starred in Brian's Song, which I think was in the 70s.
Yeah, that's an old movie.
Yeah, and that was like probably about close to 10 years before Empire came out. Close.
Yeah.
He was already a big star when Empire came out.
Yeah, he was. He was.
Yeah, selling Colt 45.
And then he went on to be in Batman.
He was Harvey Dent.
He was Harvey Dent.
He was Harvey Dent. That was crazy.
That's awesome. Now, really quick, how much time do we have left? Let's see.
You're at 47.
All right, we got plenty of time. I played a game here. We call it the movie facts game, but we pick an individual. And then basically it's this. I give you 4 facts, 3 of which are real, 1's fake. You tell me which fact is fake. The actor in question is Harrison Ford.
Okay.
Fact number 1 about Harrison Ford. One of his jobs in his early acting days...
Are we going to get Reno in on this one?
Yes. One of his jobs in his early acting days...
I'm listening. I'm going to get Reno
a
mic.
...was a roadie on tour with the Doors. Fact number 2. He was offered the title role in Schindler's List, but declined. Fact number 3. Because of his popularity in Blade Runner, he became a product spokesman for Japanese electronics in the early 1980s. Fact number 4. Unlike his Indiana Jones character, he has no fear of snakes. In fact, he owns 8 different species of snake at his ranch. 3 of these facts are real. 1's fake. Matt, which is the fake? You go first.
The first 2, briefly.
One of his early jobs when his acting career was getting started was a roadie with the Doors.
Okay.
Fact number 2 was that he was offered the title role in Schindler's List but passed.
I'm going with number 2.
Chris?
Which one is
fake?
The Doors.
The Doors? Reno?
The Doors.
Believe it or not,
Nobody.
The fact that is fake here is that his he actually has no fear of snakes and that he owns 8 different species of snakes.
He was actually a roadie for the Doors.
He was a roadie for the Doors.
That's crazy,
isn't it?
Yeah, how about that? Strange days.
That is really weird. I know he was a carpenter.
Yeah,
I know he was a carpenter.
But it was another weird job.
Not a roadie
for
the Doors.
Weird, wild stuff.
Yeah. Now, we talked about it on the last Cinema Jaw that me and Matt were doing a movie exchange.
Yeah.
I gave you.
You gave me In Bruges.
And you gave me Dead Alive, Peter Jackson, early film.
Yeah.
Give me your review of In Bruges, Matt.
I liked In Bruges. Here we have two hitmen. I found it a little predictable. Colin Farrell is the one hitman. And I can't stand Colin Farrell. So right away, my opinion of this was sort of colored.
Sure.
But I gave it a chance.
As was mine, yes.
Yeah. The set pieces are amazing. Obviously, they're in Bruges, which is a real place in
Belgium.
Belgium, thanks, mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's sort of this melancholy tale, and it just, I liked it. It was cool. It's like Pulp Fiction-y almost, but like the British Pulp Fiction. But a little predictable. I liked it, though.
Yeah.
I liked it.
It had some fun characters, especially when the guy shows up at the end. Now his name escapes me.
Harry?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the thing. Like I watched the commentary. You root for all the characters, even the bad guys.
Right.
Like, everybody's relatable in this film, and I think that's its saving grace.
Yeah.
But, you know, I could go on and on about In Bruges, but I want to hear what your opinion was of Dead Alive.
Yeah, now Matt gives me in the movie exchange, first ever movie exchange, Dead Alive, Peter Jackson. This is circa, let me see here, I wrote it down here so I wouldn't forget. I believe it's 1992, if I'm not mistaken.
That sounds right.
Yes. And I'll say this much. Not a bad movie at all. It's very gory. It's an over-the-top gore fest. It's got some slapstick comedy involved.
Splatstick.
They call it splatstick because there's so much blood and there's just goofiness going on. I laughed a lot more than I thought I was going to laugh. I was actually grossed out by a lot of the scenes in the movie.
The dinner scene.
The dinner scene is gross. There's also the part where the mom eats the dog. And
not
the famous line is, "You're my dog."
Not all of it.
But overall, I'll be honest, I, not being a huge gore fan, by the end I was already getting numb to it and like, all right, come on, I needed a little bit more story. Like, it was just enough story to get it over the finish line for me to be like, all right, I liked it. You know, slight recommend from Ryan the Movie Guy.
The zombie baby and stuff, I mean.
He was funny, and the way he would move was hilarious, and even that organ, what would you say that organ was that would jump around and get on...
Guts. I don't know. It was a colon, I think.
It was. Dead Alive, like I say, slight recommend. That's coming from a guy who doesn't like gory movies, so give it a spin. It's Peter Jackson, so...
You can't go wrong with Pete.
I agree. We're going to do another movie exchange probably next week.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Yeah. But we're coming to an end of Cinema Jaw.
Yep, we're running out of time. So
we want to thank our guest.
Yeah, thanks, Chris, for coming
thanks
out.
Thanks for having me on the show, guys. It's been a good one.
Again, go to theforceamongus.com. Pick up this movie. It's awesome if you're a Star Wars fan or buying a gift for a Star Wars fan.
Or just interested in truly independent film, because that's what this is.
If you want to see the locations, how they are today, it would be really, really good view.
Yeah
definitely.
Perfect. And we want to thank our sponsors, PBR. Steve Reno, best producer there is.
Yeah, simply the best.
Yeah, and also Big News Radio.
Yeah.
The biggest, SlamNet.
The
What's
biggest
it called?
News, Slam Internet Radio, Stranger Days. You can catch us on iTunes and at cinemajaw.com.
And if you have any questions, please email us at mattandrye@cinemajaw.com.
See you guys next week.
Take care.